Thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thanks so much for having me.
When did you first start working with transit in Wisconsin?
So I moved to Milwaukee in August of 1994 to head up a group called the Alliance for Future Transit. And that was a nonprofit that was formed by several prominent members of the Milwaukee business community to try to ensure that the $289 million of federal money that we had at the time to build a modern transit system in greater Milwaukee was used the right way.
So what happened with that?
Well, interestingly, the last $55 million of that $289 million is the federal money that was used to build the first installment of the HOP. So the streetcar line that just opened utilized $55 million. There was a grand compromise made in the early 2000s after an extensive light rail proposal was killed by the Wisconsin legislature. There was a deal struck between then-Governor Thompson, then-Mayor Norquist, and then-County Executive Ament to use the bulk of the money, so all but at the time $91 million of it, for a series of things that they could agree on. So the Sixth Street Viaduct Project received some of that money. The state park near the Summerfest grounds received some of that money. Some of the market interchange work benefited from some of that money. End of the day, there was $91 million left over, and that ended up getting split up between the city, the $55 million that was used for the streetcar, and the county got $36 million that it used to buy new buses.
Okay. This is interesting. I haven't heard about this light rail project before. What was that?
So this was a very, very contentious issue back in the 1990s and even early 2000s. And so originally, there were several options looked at, but there was a very solid plan on the table in the late 1990s that would have called for a light rail line running from downtown all the way out to the zoo, with about 8 to 10 stops in between, serving both the downtown area, somewhat similarly to what the streetcar is attempting to do today, but also providing a form of more rapid transit to actually connect Central City or downtown residents with the regional medical center and the zoo out in Wauwatosa with stops in between. So it would have been more akin for those who have been in Minneapolis and been on their light rail line or St. Louis and been on theirs, as opposed to only 2.5 miles. It would have been 12 miles. There was also a call for a branch that would go actually up into the North Avenue area, so up Martin Luther King Drive for 4 or 5 miles. It would have been a more extensive commuter type urban rail plan as opposed to the current streetcar, which is really more of an economic development project.
What made it contentious?
Well, there's been a lot of contentiousness over rail transit, all forms of rail transit, both in this region and in this state. What it essentially boils down to is that regardless of whether there is federal money available, these tend to be very expensive projects. There is an impression that not everybody will use the rail line. And so there has tended to be opposition from some who say, well, if this is only going to be used by a select few, why is the general taxpayer being asked to pay so much money? Couldn't we just as easily and much less expensively use buses for this type of a transit option? And interestingly, indeed, there is now a bus rapid transit proposal that is starting to or that is waiting to be implemented, waiting for federal approval, that in some respects does mirror what was originally proposed to be accomplished via a light rail line.
So the question is really about high-speed rails. And I know that in 2009, we did have this plan to have high-speed rail in the state of Wisconsin. What happened there?
So first of all, I would qualify that by referring to it as higher speed rail.
Okay. And
many people use that terminology, but really high speed rail is the type of rail we envision that's being used in Japan and Asia and Europe, trains going up to 300 miles per hour. What was on the table here was higher speed rail, perhaps achieving speeds of 110 to 125 miles per hour. And once upon a time, there was a very carefully laid out plan. a Midwest Regional Rail Initiative that essentially saw Chicago as being the center of sort of in a wheel, so a spoke approach, where there would be higher speed rail connections between Chicago and Milwaukee, heading then west to Madison, so connecting Milwaukee and Madison and going then all the way to Minneapolis, higher speed rail between Chicago and St. Louis, higher speed rail to Detroit, and throughout the Midwest. And once upon a time, you had 9 Midwestern states that were all on board, no pun intended, to actually try to lobby together for the federal government to allocate federal resources to do this whole Midwest rail initiative. That was in the late 1990s, early 2000s. What happened then in 2009 was as a result of the federal stimulus package. So we were in the depths of the worst recession in anyone's memory, unless you were alive in 1929. And one of the things that the federal government did was pass a stimulus package that suddenly made billions of dollars of federal money available for big infrastructure projects. And initially, the state of Wisconsin was designated to receive $800 million of that. And that really would have got the ball rolling for two things. Number one, to establish a rail connection between Milwaukee and Madison, and also to enhance the service between Chicago and Milwaukee. That money was applied for and received by the Doyle administration, and it was granted. However, before the money could be spent, there was a gubernatorial election in the fall of 2008. Governor Walker got elected, and Governor Walker elected to send the money back to Washington and say, we're not interested in pursuing this project.
What was Governor Walker's rationale for that?
A couple different rationales, and again, I hate to put words in people's mouths, but number one, again, not dissimilar from the whole light rail fight, the argument that while these are federal dollars, they're still taxpayer dollars, and so questioning the utility of such a system, how widely it would be used, and whether, again, from a cost-benefit perspective, it was worth it, irrespective of the source of the dollars. Number two, the federal dollars would have paid for the construction. Operating these trains between Milwaukee and Madison had a price tag of about $7 or $8 million per year, as I recall, and the governor balked at spending the money to operate the rail plan.
Do you know how much we spend on roads a year?
Far, 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 far more than $7 to $8 million per year.
Okay.
There's the state transportation budget is in the hundreds of millions of dollars per year. I'm sorry, I can't remember the exact number.
No problem. It's kind of an off.
Yep.
Question, but just curious. I know there aren't a ton of examples of specifically high-speed rails in the United States. We do tend to have higher speed, as you suggested, 110 miles per hour versus what we see in Europe or Japan. But how have high-speed rails impacted cities around the globe?
Well, it depends. And one of the key elements of having rail be successful from a ridership perspective is population density. And in Europe, certainly, cities are designed differently and suburbs are designed differently. And there's much more focus on urban cores and suburban areas are not as far flung as they are here. And you have much greater population density. And so as a result, rail transit from a ridership perspective has the potential to be a lot more successful because there are more people within dense areas to use it, and it's easier to serve population centers. One of the problems with when we have a sprawled type of metro area is that fixed rail has stops in fixed locations. And if you have to drive your car to get to the rail station, that's a bigger impediment than if you can walk to the rail station or easily take a short bus to the train station. So, again, density makes a lot of difference. And so rail has been very successful and has been sustained in Europe. In the United States, for a variety of reasons, we once had much more rail than we have today. But the way that we evolved and the way we developed in some respects made it not feasible. Some have argued that it's the subsidies that we have given to highway building and to the automobile industry. And so when you think about 50, 60 years ago, you had private companies running rail systems and able to make money. Some argue that because we have so heavily subsidized highway building and automobile usage, that meant the private sector couldn't make money running rail systems or any type of transit systems. The Milwaukee County Transit System used to be privately owned, but the private company couldn't make money anymore, and the county took it over, and now the county is actually subsidizing it. And so lots of reasons. I could go on and on the topic, but again, a sort of a confluence of factors has created a situation where the automobile certainly is king in the United States more than it is in a lot of other places.
When we look at cities and areas, countries where they have high-speed rails, are they more dense in general than the United States?
I think without question they are. And I think another reason that high-speed rail is successful in Europe is it's not only an alternative to automobile traffic, but it's an alternative to air traffic. What was pictured by the Obama administration when back in 2009 they came up with this big federal high-speed rail initiative, which included sending substantial dollars to certain parts of the country to get started on this, as we were deemed to receive that $800 million. But the vision was really that this is for sort of intermediate levels of travel, 200-300-mile trips, which right now you could drive, but that takes a while, and we have traffic congestion. So if you're trying to drive from Milwaukee to Detroit, you have to go through Chicago, and there's lots of congestion there. Air travel, we have increasing congestion in terms of air travel, delays. You have to get to the airport, and then you have to get from the airport to wherever you're going. That's where rail was thought at the time that it could serve a very important niche for those, not the very lengthy trips and not the shorter trips, but these intermediate level trips of 200 to 300 miles.
So let's say that, Governor Evers gets into office and we somehow have the political will to make a high-speed rail or get a high-speed rail between, let's say, Milwaukee and Chicago. What would have to happen for that to happen?
So the original hope was that we could, by making some investment in the tracks and in newer technology and so forth, that we could reduce the travel time on Amtrak between Chicago and Milwaukee from the current approximately an hour and 34 minutes to about an hour and 4 minutes. And think about that. On the one hand, maybe that doesn't sound like very much, but boy, if I could get from Chicago to Milwaukee in an hour and 4 minutes, that's going to beat driving in my car, I think, without question, and arguably it's more convenient, et cetera. It may be a little more expensive, but when you think about parking in downtown Chicago, maybe it's not. The problem is that it does take a considerable upfront capital investment. And here in the state of Wisconsin, we have several other competing transportation needs. We no longer have those federal dollars available. So unless there was a way to come up with some federal dollars, and there is talk of potentially, since the Trump administration came in, there's been talk about infrastructure maybe being the issue where the Republicans and the Democrats could agree. And now in the wake of the elections, there's talk again that infrastructure may be one of the top agenda items in Washington. And if that's the case, might it include a high-speed rail component again? Hard to say. I guess there's a slight possibility. But if that doesn't happen, then the state would have to come up with considerable dollars, as would ostensibly the state of Illinois, and they'd have to foot the bill together. And that could be prohibitively expensive given all of both states' financial challenges and other competing transportation needs. But that's what it would take.
All right. Well, Rob Henkin, thank you so much for joining me and giving us so much information.
Well, thanks so much for having me.